Genesis chapter 39, look at verse 13. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. These Wednesday nights, we've embarked upon a study of the life of Joseph. And in chapter 39, we remarked a couple of weeks ago that the first 11 years of Joseph's life in Egypt is covered in chapter 39. He has been brought to Egypt as a slave, to be sold as a slave. And despite that situation in his life, the Lord prospered him and he became a very trusted servant to Potiphar. But then he resists the advances of Potiphar's wife. She falsely accuses him of what would be attempted rape or attempted assault, and Joseph ends up being thrown in prison. And there are four circumstances that Joseph finds himself in during these years, and in each one of them, Joseph proves himself to be faithful. And that's really, for me, the theme of chapter 39. And not only was Joseph faithful to God, but God was faithful to Joseph. I remarked that there is no mention of God in chapter 37, that first chapter, but no less than four times in chapter 39 do you read that the Lord was with Joseph. And what you see in this chapter is a young man standing up for God, doing right no matter what happens in life. In every circumstance, Joseph is the same. He's unmoved by the situation. And I say to you that whatever is happening in the world right now, as the world literally burns to the ground, it should not have an effect on your walk with God. Faithfulness is not circumstantial. I should live my faith as zealously in one situation as I do any other situation. So there's four situations in this chapter. The first one is he's faithful in spite of problems. You find that in verse number 1 and 2. Chapter 39 opens where chapter 37 ends, and it reminds us of the events that Joseph encountered when he went searching for his brothers. But in spite of all that happened to him, he now finds himself as a servant to an Egyptian. He is still true to God. In fact, he reminds us a lot about Daniel, a young man that is carried to a foreign land in a pagan place. And he stays true to his convictions, even though it could cost him his life. And again, Christianity is not circumstantial. Doesn't matter what's happening with the Democrats and the Republicans and in all of that, we can still live a godly and victorious life. If Trump gets reelected or if he doesn't get reelected, if Hillary gets in or whoever gets in, it doesn't matter. You can still live a victorious life as a Christian, faithful in spite of the problems. But then we find that he's faithful in spite of prosperity, and that's in verse 3 through 6. Because sometimes men lose their convictions over success. Sometimes it is not problems, sometimes it is prosperity that causes a man to compromise his convictions and to value material wealth over spiritual growth. And when Joseph got to Egypt, he found out that everything that he touched, God blessed. It wasn't long before Potiphar notices how exceptional he is. He brings him into the house. He puts him in charge of everything over his household. And we talked about how the blessings on Joseph's life spilled over onto Potiphar. And though he is a servant, Joseph still becomes successful. But what is remarkable about Joseph is that prosperity did not corrupt his faith in God. Because success can be an entanglement. Prosperity can be as much your downfall as trouble. Prosperity, material wealth, that will expose what is in your heart quicker than anything else. And if God has blessed you, and He has, then make sure that you keep your eye on the blesser and not the blessing. He is faithful in spite of prosperity. But then we said that He's faithful in spite of pressure. That's verse 7 through verse number 12. Joseph eventually is brought from the field into the house. He has more personal contact with Potiphar and with his wife, more of a leadership type role, and he's got favor on his life. And I'm not sure, verse number 6, the last statement, could indicate that he's a good-looking man. Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. And as he interacted with the family more and more, Potiphar's wife set her eyes on him. In fact, that's the statement in verse number 7. It came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. And it probably started out as subtle suggestions. It soon escalated to a blatant proposition where she says at the end of verse number 7, "Lie with me." And the temptation for Joseph is very similar to the first temptation that you find in the Garden of Eden. Because there Adam and Eve had the use of everything except the forbidden fruit. Here Joseph has access to everything that belongs to Potiphar's wife except his wife. Whereas the forbidden fruit just hung there for the taking, Potiphar's wife is actively pursuing Joseph. But while Adam and Eve took the one thing that they could not have and lost their innocence, Joseph refused to take the one thing he should not, and he maintained his innocence. He stayed faithful despite that pressure of that temptation. And there were three ways that Joseph dealt with that temptation. First, he tried to reason with the woman. Look at verse number 8. The Bible says, "But he refused and said unto his master's wife, 'Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house. He hath committed all that he hath to mine hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?'" He tries to reason with her. Here's why I can't do this. He tries to tell her, "Look, Potiphar has trusted me. It would not be right for me to betray that trust." He reminds her, "You are somebody's wife. This would be an adulterous affair to do this." And then he even says, "Hey, I'm a servant of Jehovah God. This would be a great sin against God." He's reasoning with her. But then when reasoning doesn't work, he has to resist her. Look at verse number 10. "And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her." Potiphar's wife is not going to be swayed by logic. She keeps coming after him day after day after day. And Joseph is in a very compromising situation. And every day he tries to avoid her, to ward her off, to try to break off the conversation, to keep her at a distance. He's resisting her. And finally he had to run from her, verse 12. "And she caught him by his garment, saying, 'Lie with me.'" Boy, here's the secret to success in temptation. "He left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out." She grabbed him and tried to force him close. And the only way that Joseph could escape was to slip out of his coat and to run. Better to lose your coat than your character. So he resisted her. He reasoned with her. He ran from her. And what I want to say is that in all of these circumstances, Jacob is a faithful man. The providence of God is still at work. It's positioning him to a place where God will be able to use him in a famine that's coming down the road. And Joseph cannot know what's God doing, and he can't read the chapters ahead of him. He just trusts God that it's all going to turn out for his good. But no matter what happens, he can be faithful to God. He's faithful in spite of problems. He's faithful in spite of prosperity. He's faithful in spite of pressure. Tonight, he's faithful in spite of prison. That fateful day when Joseph literally ran away from Potiphar's wife, leaving his coat behind, was the day that she said, "I'll get revenge on him." He probably retreated to his quarters, and that night, his mind is racing. What happens next? Did she finally get the message? Is it over? Or is it just beginning? Is she going to keep trying? Is she going to escalate this? What do I do next? And Joseph wouldn't have to wait too long before he found out what her next move was. Because she immediately calls in other servants and she tells this incredible story that accuses Joseph of assaulting her. And in the only spoken words that are recorded of this woman in the Bible, we get great insight to the character of a seductive woman. And in this scene, I want you to think about the three main characters for just a moment. First of all, there is Potiphar's wife. Potiphar's wife. Now, Potiphar, verse 1 tells you that he is an officer in Pharaoh's army. He's a captain of the guard. He is a high-ranking official. And it would not be a stretch of the imagination to imagine his wife as a socialite. She's accustomed to the good life. Nice clothes and servants and prestige of being married to a successful man. When you saw her, you would say that she was well put together. Hair done, nails done, dressed in the most modern fashion. But you know, you can be a picture of perfection on the outside and be a shambles on the inside. You look at the picture of all the Hollywood elites and you say, boy, their lives are perfect. But you know, those people are strung out on drugs and those people are alcoholics and those people are attempting suicide because while they have money, they don't have any morals. And for all the superficial indicators of her success and her prestige, she is a wreck on the inside. There's a couple of things I know about her. One, she had an adulterous heart. It's obvious. She's impure in her thoughts and her motives. And she lives every day to try to find a way to fulfill her lust. Now, usually you find that in men, but it is true in her. She is what you call a loose woman. She has lust in her mind. It moves to her lips. Lie with me. And it's acted out with her hands when she grabs him. I don't know this for a fact, but I wouldn't be surprised if Joseph was not her only prey. Now, I don't know that, but it wouldn't surprise me if I found out that she's attempted this and perhaps succeeded with other men. He's probably just the next one in a long line of conquest. She has an adulterous heart. I'll tell you another thing I know about her. She's an able liar. She's the kind of woman that will not take no for an answer. In fact, when Joseph resisted her, it probably just made her more determined. If he's going to play hard to get, then I can play this game. And I relish the challenge. But then she got caught in her own game and she has to quickly pivot to lies to cover herself. And when Potiphar, her husband, came home, she looked him straight in the eyeballs and told a blatant lie. That's a dangerous person. In fact, look if you would at the line. Look at verse 14. She called unto the men of her house and spake to them, saying, "See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us." Now watch this. "For he came in unto me to lie with me." No, he didn't. That's a lie. "And I cried with a loud voice." No, you didn't. That's a lie. "And it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried that he left his garment with me and fled." No, he didn't run when you cried with a loud voice. He ran when you tried to grab him. In one breath, she has told three blatant lies. She has an adulterous heart. She's an able liar. Here's the third thing about her. She is capable of murderous hatred. Now, there is no doubt that Potiphar had the power to have Joseph executed for trying to defile his wife. He's a Hebrew servant. He's in Egyptian culture. He could very easily lose his head over this. And this woman is willing for him to go to prison for at least 2 years. knowing false accusation, she'd be willing for him to lose his life. What is the saying? Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Oh, you better believe that. I remember many years ago, we had to let a staff member go here one time. Many years ago, he had charged a lot of stuff on a credit card, and the trustees decided we'd just write the debt off, but we can't be on staff. And did it just as gracious as we possibly could. His wife got very embarrassed, and she got very angry. And she sat at breakfast over the table at Cracker Barrel with my wife, and she said, "If it is the last thing I do, I will destroy your husband." Well, that's nice. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. That's Potiphar's wife. That's who she is. But then in this scenario, we find out something about Potiphar. Potiphar comes home that fateful day, and his wife is curled up in a ball on the couch, and she's sobbing. And through her false tears, she tells him everything that had not happened that day. In fact, twice she refers to Joseph as that Hebrew servant that you brought in unto us. Suddenly shifting the blame, you trusted him and you brought him into the house. And if Potiphar would have allowed himself some time to ask some questions and think it through, he probably would have thought, you know, everything's not adding up. This story does not make sense. Could I really have been that bad of a judge of character to bring him into the house? Was I really that fooled by him? This goes against everything that is logical, but a crying woman can be very persuasive. And how Potiphar responds to his wife tells us something about him. In fact, two things about him. One, he allowed his judgment to be clouded by his anger. Look at verse number 19. "And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled." It's an interesting word, isn't it? His wrath was kindled. His anger was set on fire. He was enraged. He went to boiling hot in an instant. It would be understandable to get angry, to be concerned about it, but don't lose your reason in anger. And as soon as his anger waxed hot, he became incapable of reason. It's never wise to make a decision while angry. Most angry decisions turn out to be wrong decisions. If you and your wife ever get into a heated conversation, wild hypothetical, I'm sure, but if you and your wife ever got into a heated conversation and anger prevails, I believe the best thing to do is to walk away. Somebody walk away two opposite directions until cooler heads prevail. Because there is nothing that you're going to say in your anger that's going to be constructive or Christian. You insult people when you're angry. You are demeaning to your children when you're angry. You spout off when your heart is moved with anger. Somebody help me. Anger is a cloud that hides reason from your mind. Potiphar knows Joseph, but in a moment of kindled anger, he makes an emotional decision that it went against everything that he knew. Potiphar allowed his judgment to be clouded by his anger. Hey, hold your finger right here. We have time to do this. Put a finger right there and go to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 14, a couple of verses here. Proverbs 14 and verse number 17. "He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly." Soon angry, quick temper, short fuse. And it's not because you're Irish, not because you got red hair. No. Because you have an uncontrolled temper. You're going to do a lot of foolish things if you are quick to anger. And the tragedy of a hot temper is that when anger takes over the actions of a man, it will produce worse results than what you got angry over. Yeah. Look at verse number, look at chapter 29. Proverbs 29, verse 22. An angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgressions. You ever seen somebody that's always in an argument? Always contentious, always defensive, always contending with somebody. Nobody wants to be friends with a contentious person. And what anger does is it leads you to other sins, because it says that a furious man aboundeth in transgressions. It gives birth to other sins that you would not have committed without the influence of that wrath. It brings consequences to your life that lasts a lot longer after the anger cools down. Look at chapter 16, Proverbs 16. Just a couple of verses, Proverbs 16, and look at verse number 32. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. When you allow your anger to take over, it's as if a city has removed all of the defenses and invited the enemy to come in and to plunder. One more, Proverbs 15, you're there. Proverbs 15, verse 18. A wrathful man stirreth up strife. He that is slow to anger appeases strife. That phrase, slow to anger, it appears 8 times in your Bible, 6 times it's referring to the Lord. So if you'd be like the Lord, you'd be slow to anger. Exhibit the same attitude toward others that he's exhibited towards you. Somebody said the greatest cure for anger is an hour or two. Just an hour or two, and come back. Potiphar allows anger to cloud his judgment. Here's the second thing about Potiphar. Come back to the text. He allowed himself to be unduly influenced by his wife. Well, that sounded like a chauvinistic statement, didn't it? It is not wrong to be influenced by your wife. In fact, many times, it's good to be influenced by your wife. But you cannot, now stay with me, all right? You cannot operate on her emotions. No, Dami. Men, by nature, on the whole, are more logical in nature. Women are more emotional. That's just how God made you. And every man knows, though you probably would not say amen to this, you know it deep down inside. You cannot be always moved by how your wife feels today. See, you know I'm right. You know I'm right. I know a man right now made a life-altering decision because his wife wanted him to have a title. And he said, I made a horrible mistake. Because he was unduly influenced by his wife. There have been many churches across the country that had a deacon who was a weak man influenced by a domineering wife. It's a sad thing when a man is a puppet controlled by a string tied around his wife's finger. So Pharaoh hears a dubious story that goes against all reason. He is moved by the influence of a manipulative and vengeful woman, and he puts Joseph in prison. No investigation, no defense. Rash decision, swift punishment that he would later regret. That's Potiphar. There's a third character, and that's Joseph. You learn a lot about Potiphar, you learn a lot about his wife, you learn more about Joseph. And what you learn about Joseph, he is a man of principle. He operates on the principle of right and wrong. And way back when he reasons with Potiphar's wife, it has nothing to do with consequences. It has nothing to do with how are we going to get away with it. It has nothing to do with will we get caught. It has nothing to do with that. No, the matter is this is wrong. It is called living by the strength of principles. By principles. It is when a man says, That my response to temptation is not whether I get caught or not. No, it is not what happens after this. This is right or wrong. Principle. I hesitate to say this because I don't want to ride a hobby horse. And my family says I'm riding a hobby horse. And I don't think that I am. So I'll say this. There's a football player. His name is Drew Brees. I think I mentioned him to you. And Drew Brees made a statement about not kneeling for the national anthem, all right? Not kneeling for the national anthem. And then everybody got upset and offended and hurt over it. And so he had turned right around and he had to apologize. Apologize a couple of times for it, you know, and backtrack. That's what you call a man of cowardice. Found out he didn't have any principle. So just the other day, there's a college football coach out in Oklahoma, and there was a picture of him, and he was wearing a T-shirt of a conservative news network, OAN. They're conservative, pro-Trump, and he was pictured with that. And the star running back announced, "I'm not going to put up with this. I'm not having anything to do with this college till the coach, things have to change." And so this coach apologized for wearing a T-shirt. Because in today's culture, you have free speech unless you disagree with what I think. That's where it stops at. You understand. So he had to apologize for that. That's what you call a man of cowardice, not principle. Hey, at the beginning of this chapter, Joseph is in prison and he has principle. In the middle of the chapter, Joseph prospers and he has principle. At the end of the chapter, he's back in prison and he still has principle. And by the way, the principles have landed him in prison. He is a young man who feared God. He's destined to become a great man in Egypt. He's one of the great patriarchs of the Old Testament. He's one of the few men. There is no mark recorded against him in the Bible. He's one of the most perfect pictures of Jesus Christ. And he's now in prison. And it's all come down to this. Favored son of the father. A dreamer about leading his family one day, taking that food and supplies to his brother, being a profitable servant to Potiphar for refusing to betray his trust and to lie with that woman, and all that it got him is a prison cell. And he could probably see himself getting out of the pit. And he could probably see himself getting away from Potiphar's wife. But how do you get out of prison? His family doesn't even know that he's there. They can't help. If his brothers knew, they would probably gloat. He finds two friends in prison. One of them is killed and one of them is executed, and the other one promptly forgets him and is left in prison. There's an interesting statement in verse number 20. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison. Which master? The master that was controlled by rage and influenced by his lying wife? Or could it be the master who was working out all things according to his divine providence? You think God could have kept him out of prison if he wanted to? I think so. Joseph is in prison because his master needed him to be there at the moment. And sometimes you can feel trapped in some circumstances beyond your control. Could God have prevented this, or did God plan this? And you are where you are because your master puts you there. And more importantly, is knowing how you're going to respond to your master when he puts you in prison. Three keys, I'm done. Three keys. Principles for prison. Here's the first one. Write it down. That when your master puts you in prison, here's the first one. Don't demand to understand. If you've ever had a kid that liked to ask questions, you know how annoying that can be. The two questions most annoying, why and where. When our kids were small, they always had to ask, where are we going? Are we there yet? How much longer till we get there? The thing about it is, they don't really need to know the answer to any of those questions. They're not driving, I am. So I don't need to explain to you how I'm getting there. Just sit back and enjoy the ride and trust that I know how to get us there. If I tried to explain it, you wouldn't understand it anyway. And sometimes you find that God doesn't always explain everything to his children. Why did God allow Peter to be delivered from prison and John to die in prison? Why did God send revival to Nineveh and not to Israel? Why did God put so many vitamins and spinach and not in ice cream? Great mysteries of life, right? Why? Why? And here's the thing. The reason why God doesn't explain everything to you is because it would be better for you to learn to trust than to understand. One of the hardest things in a trial is to accept that you don't have to have an explanation. An explanation may help, but trusting God will help you more. It is not logic and reason that will get you through the trial. It is faith that will get you through. And when you're in a storm, it's not going to help you to understand more about the science of storms. No, it's best just to know the one who can calm the storm and trust him. If you've ever sat beside a grieving person and know that you needed to give them words of comfort and you struggle because you know none of your words is going to answer the one question on their mind, why? I've stood by the bedside of a sainted God and watched as she took her last breath holding the hand of her husband. And I know what his question is. And I've sat all night with a man in his house, crying with him all night long because his wife had just left him. And in 26 years of pastoring, I've never been able to give a satisfactory answer to why. I don't know why situations in life happen. I don't need to know why. I know the one who does know, and I trust him. Don't demand to understand. Second principle tonight, I hurry. Don't bow to bitterness. If anyone has a right to bitterness, we can make a case for Joseph. He could be bitter at Jacob, his father, for sending him out there to his brothers. He could certainly be bitter at his brothers for the treatment that he received at their hand. He could be bitter at the Ishmaelites. He could be bitter at Potiphar. He could be bitter at Potiphar's wife. He could be bitter because most people in prison are bitter. Well, listen to Hebrews 12:15. Looking diligently, lest any man fell of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. No human emotion more dangerous, more destructive than bitterness. That there is no emotion of the human heart that promises more and delivers less than bitterness. And though you may have been wrong, and though you may be in the right, there is no good that comes out of a bitter spirit. I find that people are bitter basically over three things. If you want to write it down, one, bitterness over what was done to us. Some of you probably could tell stories of injustices and betrayals and abuses and rejection and tragedy and persecution, something that was done to you. But Jesus has an answer for that. In Matthew 5 and verse 38, you've heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye and tooth for tooth. I say unto you that you resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. I find people are bitter over what was said about them. Slander that ruined their reputation, gossip that destroyed friendships, backbiting that separated a relationship. But Jesus has an answer for that too, Matthew 5 and verse 11. Blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you. Shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice, be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. I find people are bitter over what was taken from them. And Jesus has an answer for that. If any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. Here's the principle. It is better to be wronged than to do wrong. Suffer the wrong and let it go. Bitterness is always based on sin that happens to you. And the issue is not how big the sin is. The issue is how close and how personal the offense is. There's thousands of women tonight who would cheat on their husband, and I won't get bitter at any of them. I'll be appalled, but not bitter. But if my wife cheated on me, then it creates bitterness. Is it any worse sin? No, it's a closer sin. You never get bitter over an offense outside of your world. The offense must be done to you or to someone close to you for you to take offense personally. It doesn't have to be a great offense. It has to be close. I don't have time to preach an entire message on bitterness, but don't bow to it. Don't let the bitter trial create in you a bitter spirit. The grace of God can heal that pain and dry those tears. And with everything that Joseph goes through, he never strikes back, he never complains against God, he never gets angry. Don't demand to understand, don't bow to bitterness. Here's my last thing. Don't fail to be faithful. Now bring it right back to where we started. A faithful man who never lost his integrity in the trials of life. Never sacrificed his character. Never shamed his Lord. As much a believer in the prison as he was in the palace. His principles did not change with the wind. His faith was not dependent upon the circumstances. I'm done with this. Over the years, I've watched a lot of people sit in the pews that you're sitting in. And tonight, they won't even darken the doors of a church. And I can think of everybody that has quit on God. I think you could label them in about three categories. One, there are those who quit because they got hurt. Either they were offended at someone or something that the preacher said. There's people in this town who got offended at me and won't come to church. I haven't been perfect. Maybe I was wrong, but it was wrong to get offended. Wrong to get offended and to quit on God because of that offense. Guard your heart. Don't ever let a petty offense take you out. There are people who quit because they got offended. There are those who quit because they got too busy. They got busy building a career and making money, and church just fell by the wayside. Hey, if you get too busy for church, you're too busy. If you have to give something up, then don't give up your service to God. I was thinking about this today. If I had been the only man alive, my wife would have married me. And that does nothing for my ego. What helps my ego is that I wasn't the only man alive. She had choices. And still, she married me. That's better for my self-esteem. When you tell God that you'll give Him your time as long as you have nothing better to do. Oh, how impressive is that? No, it's when you give something up so that I can serve God. That speaks of your love to Him. There are those who quit because they got busy. There are those who quit because they faced a trial. They got hurt somewhere and they just quit. And they used to be in church, and they used to be involved, and they used to be faithful, and they used to. But now they never darken the doors of a church. And I say tonight, is it in your heart that no matter the trial, I'm going to be faithful? Don't demand to understand. Don't bow to bitterness. Don't fail to be faithful. Faithful even in prison. Heavenly Father, thank you for your word tonight, the example of the life of Joseph, and so many principles for life in it. And I pray tonight that you would help your people, your church tonight. I don't know the trials. I don't know the hardships. Only you do. I know what they tell me. You know what they feel and what they don't tell anybody. But help us to walk out of here with resolve and principle tonight. No matter the hurt, no matter the pain, no matter what happens in this world, I'm going to be faithful. Faithful to you. Stand to our feet together if you would, all over the building. Jacob's going to sing the first verse of this.